Hi, this is Carl Weinchang for the Daily Music Break at www.dailymusicbreak.com. We're here today to speak a little bit about Jimi Hendrix, and we're speaking with my brother, Walter, who is an expert, in my opinion, on the topic. How are you doing today, Walt?
Good, Carl. Good to be here.
Great to have you. Appreciate you taking the time out. Well, what got you attracted at the beginning? What attracted you, what resonated with you about Jimi Hendrix?
It was by pure chance. I was at a friend's house, and his brother had the new Jimi Hendrix album, was playing it kind of loud in the house, and it just took me. And I said to my friend, what is that?
Right.
And we, upon further examination, it happened to be the album, the first Jimi Hendrix album called Are You Experienced? We were listening to a song called Hey Joe, which was a big hit for him. I loved it, and that's the rest is history. I just was taken with it, and ever since I've been listening to it.
Do you remember what particularly resonated with you? It's a long time ago. Anything in particular? What felt new to you at that point? There was obviously a lot happening on the music scene, and there was a lot of new stuff happening. But do you remember any specifics about Hendrix that initially attracted you?
Sure, and you're right. Of course, a lot was happening then with music. It was a real creative time, and different groups and different people were coming up with new things all the time. But when I heard this, it just took me because it was blues, first of all.
Right.
But it was blues played in a way that I could relate to, which was very electric. The bass line was very prominent and was very intense. The guitar work especially was just incredible, and I had never heard anything like that. And so I was immediately curious about it and immediately taken up with it.
It's interesting you put it that way, because it kind of leads into the next question. You're describing an artist who really knows what he wants to do and what he's doing, what he's all about. But Hendrix had been playing as kind of a traditional backup musician. He played with the Isley Brothers, played with Little Richard. And I'm sure doing the things that backup musicians do. What do you attribute that ability to go so quickly from being a backup guy, studio guy too, I guess, to being someone who's doing something that's really monumental and new so quickly? Do you have any ideas on that, Walt?
Well, I think a couple of things contributed to it. First of all, he was an extremely creative guy, and he was almost itching to get out of that role as a backup player, number one.
Right.
Number two, the technology at the time allowed him to create sounds and create music that didn't fit into that particular R&B genre. It was just outside of that box. And he was really getting into that, and he needed an avenue to be able to explore and to be a so-called architect of a new sound. I don't know if that was his design. He just had that itch. And playing behind the Isley Brothers and King Curtis and Little Richard, that's not where he was going to find it, especially when these band leaders would really just kind of put these guys in a straitjacket in terms of style, in terms of what they were playing and how they were playing it. The third aspect of this, by the way, was luck. Of course, so many people were doing so many different things, but the reason why you and I heard, you know, on day one that he was playing behind Little Richard, and on day two he was putting out the album Are You Experienced, was luck. It just so happened that a gentleman by the name of Chas Chandler, who used to be in a group called The Animals, but became kind of a talent scout producer, heard Hendrix and was so taken up with his sound and saw his incredible virtuosity that he immediately just flew him over to England, put him together with a bass player and a drummer, and they started making albums shortly thereafter, after making some really big impression in terms of appearances. Mm-hmm. So no doubt in my mind, Hendrix would have emerged with a new sound anyway, but it's always a bit of luck that helps you along. And by the way, another aside is that Hendrix, after leaving Little Richard, I mean, he was dirt poor. He was not making it. So there was a period too where he was not going anywhere. And again, we just see, you know, day one, he's behind a group. Day two, he's a megastar. Right. But a lot happened in between.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the Experience put out three albums without digging too deep into the weeds or into the bits and bytes of it. Was there that would seem to me to be two parallel things, which would be the growth of Hendrix as an artist over the course of the three albums, and also the change in the technology, both technology that existed and what he was able to afford and what the record labels would buy for him. So a long-winded question, but what did the three Jimi Hendrix Experience albums, was there a transition or a growth during that period of those three albums or between the three albums?
There absolutely was. Now, Are You Experienced was the first album, and that was a monumental album, and it was very exciting. It was the blues, it was psychedelia, it was all kinds of forward-leaning sounds. He was able to produce in the studio and through effects different types of sound that nobody had ever really heard before. Well, they heard it before through other groups, but he took it a step further. And so that album was huge in and of itself. But as he went further along, he got more confident and he used the studio as an instrument, and he started using sound and noise and feedback and distortion, mm-hmm. phasing, panning, all kinds of effects to produce a much thicker, much more creative and much more dynamic sound. And in the next album called Axis, Bold as Love, which I think only came out maybe a year and a half later, it was exponentially better, mm-hmm. in my view, or I should say not better, but more advanced. And his confidence certainly had been building. He was a real creature of the studio, and he was fascinated with sound and noise and how to produce it. By the time we got to the third album, Electric Ladyland, he was really just in another universe. Mm-hmm. Electric Ladyland, by the way, is considered a monumental album. It's I don't know where it is on the Rolling Stone top 500 albums, but it's way up there because he just outdid himself in terms of creating new sound, new space, and it was a real, I'd say, just a landmark album, even more so than the other two. And by the way, that album was the only album of the three that he produced, or he might have co-produced it with Chandler, I'm not quite sure, but it was him. I mean, he had control over what was going on with that third album.
And so this speedy run through the career of Jimi Hendrix, the experience ended, broke up, and then he joined to form the band of Gypsies. How would you characterize, I guess, the difference between Jimi Hendrix's experience and Band of Gypsies, and why do you think that happened?
Well, in terms of the last question first, why it happened, Hendrix, in around early 69 or so, was getting really, tired of the same old requests for the same old songs. He wanted to expand out because, again, as I mentioned, he was a real creative guy, and he had his eye on a new kind of music. And he started hanging around with other musicians, some of them jazz musicians, some of them old friends, just really engaging with other sounds and other people. And eventually he came to put together a new kind of music. This new kind of music was first heard by the public at Woodstock, actually. Jimi Hendrix Experience did not play Woodstock. It was some kind of weird name like Hendrix, Stars and Suns and Rainbows or something. And it was Hendrix with these other, you know, musicians. It was a new sound. Now, the Band of Gypsies came about toward the end of 69. In terms of the sound, I have to say two things about that. First of all, it was much more of a roots sound, so to speak. It was a platform, if you will, for him to be with other black musicians. Up until this point, he had been playing with white musicians. This was an all-black group. Some people saw this as something of a political statement. I happen to think that it really wasn't. Buddy Miles, the drummer, and Billy Cox, the bass player, were guys he knew for quite some time, felt very comfortable with. But the big difference was that this was going really back into his R&B roots, real funk, real soul kind of sound. At the same time, it was, again, launching forward. His guitar work was dynamic. It was fast. It was complicated. It was new. It was exciting. And I should mention that on this album, which Hendrix wasn't particularly fond of, was really kind of a throwaway album for him. It was done basically to fulfill a contractual obligation that he had. This album contained on it a song called Machine Gun, which is considered by many guitarists and by many people who don't even play guitar as one of his masterpiece solo guitar pieces. It was an extended solo. It was a political piece, basically. It meant to reflect what was going on in Vietnam. And the guitar work, all I can say is that it was physical. It was colorful. It was dynamic. It was new. And it was one of the best things that I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. And I still listen to it to this day. So it was a new kind of music. And I should add also that this was not a studio album. It should be kept in mind that this was a live album. Right. So it did not have a lot of the extra effects that maybe a studio album would have had. And nevertheless, on stage, he was able to create this new experience.
Yeah, that's always been probably my favorite Hendrix song, Machine Gun. It's amazing. So, and then unfortunately, Jimi Hendrix died. What do you think? What would your guess be if Hendrix had not died of what the Jimi Hendrix in the 50 years since would be like and what direction he would have gone in?
Well, clearly it's, you know, I don't know, but I do have some feelings about it. And I do think really two things. First of all, Hendrix, if anything, was a blues player. He was probably the best blues player that I ever heard. And he took blues to a new level. And so whatever music he was playing, my feeling is that he would have been going back and digging into the blues to create whatever new music, whether it be jazz or whatever kind of music he was doing, it would be rooted in the blues, and he'd keep on going back there for ideas and for inspiration. At the same time, he would have been reaching forward through technology for new sounds, mm-hmm. in the studio, on stage, through gadgetry, through pedals and effects, whatever the case may be. He would have been using the technology of whatever era we're talking about to reach new heights. And so when you combine the technology and the reaching out for new sounds and the reaching back to what he was, which was a blues player, mm-hmm. you would have gotten a dynamic Jimi Hendrix in whatever shape, form, or music he happened to be looking into or playing at the time.
Mm-hmm. And for the last question I have, Will, is what combination of things, in your opinion, between his genius, his creativity, and his charisma has led Hendrix to still, you know, be a household name? He's Jimmy. He's one of the people, you only have to say his first name, Louis, Jimmy, Duke, Miles. What do you think has enabled him to attain that status and still hold it 50 years or so after he passed away?
I think that the sounds that he produced, especially on Electric Ladyland, were so out there and so kind of new and in a way universal, mm-hmm. that anybody who listens to that music, now somehow they have to come into contact with it, whether it's through a parent's record collection or through sampling or through whatever it is, whatever channel they find the music, what they will hear is something out of this world, unworldly, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I should also say that for guitar players in particular, they study him like they would study any other founder of music or some kind of great musician or composer in the past who has advanced the instrument and advanced music. Mm-hmm. And people are constantly finding new things in what he was doing, and are because of the complexity of it, because of the uniqueness of it, are constantly finding new things in it. And for these reasons, I think this music lends itself to, you know, other generations and other listeners. It helps to have people, quite frankly, the lawsuit between the family and another contract holder. There had been a lot of legal problems holding up release of a lot of really good material. That material is out now, and it's being pushed and marketed. So I think this also helps to kind of rewind things and push things out once again to get the word out.
Very interesting. It also occurs to me that his image is almost the image of one of the images of those times, you know, Hendrix on stage at Woodstock, or, you know, it doesn't hurt to be incredibly photogenic and charismatic.
Oh, I agree. You know, I absolutely agree. At the time of his death, he was the highest paid rock musician, I believe. That's what I believe to be the case at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was so big then that, that inertia just has to carry over. And yes, he was kind of the face of the 60s. 60s music in a lot of ways.
Right. Well, I'd like to thank you very much. This has been extremely interesting. I didn't mention at the beginning, tell the audience that you're quite a guitar player yourself. Not in Hendrix League, but, you know.
No, not in Hendrix League.
Not even, like you say, you're a single A and he's in the pros.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, thanks again. And this is Carl Weintraub for the Daily Music Break at www.dailymusicbreak.com. Bye-bye, everybody.